This week on the podcast, I'll be discussing whitening. It's one of the most common things I speak about with my patients, as most people care about the way they look on some level. And if you could easily improve it, people like to take actions around that. So the most common questions we get are, how white will I get? How sensitive will I be? Does whitening harm my teeth? And how often can I whiten my teeth? So in this episode, we hope to answer all those questions. We'll start by talking about the appearance of your teeth. What actually makes your teeth appear the way they are? Do they get darker over time? What genetic factors can impact the way your teeth look? And also the environmental factors that can change the way your teeth appear over time. We'll spend a little time, because I think it's worth it, on how whitening actually works. What is the chemical process? What is actually happening here that causes your teeth to shift their appearance? Then we'll go into a deep dive of the different whitening processes, from over-the-counter to toothpaste to in-office professional prescription strength materials. We'll also talk about and look at the literature around, does whitening harm your teeth? A very common question and a very common misconception. Touch upon what happens around sensitivity, how to prevent it, how to treat it, and some of the behaviors to avoid and kind of tips around whitening. So I hope you can walk away with this understanding the different approaches and the different results that you can expect when trying a different result and the impact of the result from sensitivity and harm, if there's any. So I hope you enjoy this and find it helpful. Thank you for joining. What makes up the appearance of your teeth? It's a great place to start. And so most people, when you're looking at your teeth, you can think about it has an outer shell of enamel. The enamel is several millimeters thick, depending on where the tooth it is, but it can range from less than a millimeter thick to 2 to 3 to 4 millimeters, depending on the person and the position on the tooth where it is. So this layer of the tooth, or the enamel, that everyone hears, I'm going to take this toothpaste and rebuild my enamel. So everyone's talking about enamel. It's 98% hydroxyapatite crystal, or fluoroapatite is part of that too, but it's 98% crystalline structure, leading the 2% of organic material and water. So it's this shell of crystalline structure that is over your body of your tooth, which is made of dentin. The enamel is a translucent layer. It's pretty much see-through. It's actually really beautifully translucent. If you look at it under cross-sections or when a tooth gets really thin, when we're preparing a tooth from the inside, like a front tooth, there's a decay along the inside, and you clean out that tooth and you see this almost clear layer of enamel. It's really beautiful, remarkable, but it actually doesn't allow for the color of your tooth. Your actual tooth is made of dentin. Most of your tooth is made of dentin. The color that you're seeing is really the dentin coming through that enamel layer. And when the light goes through the enamel, it hits the dentin, reflects off and goes back to a camera or your eye. And that's what's being viewed as the color of your tooth. This dentin is 70% crystalline structure. So it's a lot less crystal and a lot more organic, right? It's about 10% water, 20% collagen makes up. So the problem with that is that as stains and things can get through the enamel, the dentin can get more stained. You can absorb into that stain, into that softer material, into the water, into the collagen, where the enamel doesn't really take in stains. It's going to have stains on the outside. So that's the perfect segue for understanding what we call the intrinsic and extrinsic appearance of your tooth. The enamel, exposed root surface, or the exposed dentin, whatever you may have. You have some recession, you may have a dark band around your lower teeth, upper teeth somewhere, that may be some exposed cementum or dentin, the root surface. This material is where we can consider the extrinsic appearance of our tooth that can get stained. Coffee, tea, fruits, all different things that you eat can get stained on the outside layer, and that can affect the extrinsic appearance of your tooth. As that enamel gets thinner as we age, or as we overuse abrasive products or overuse of acid, some people who may have GERD, acid reflux, or things like bulimia can erode the enamel of your teeth, changing the appearance of your tooth by lessening the enamel. And as more of that dentin shows through, the tooth appears darker. The other part of the outer layer, the extrinsic, the external appearance of the tooth, that I think is the most overlooked aspect of aesthetics for cosmetic dentistry from average teeth being made in dental labs, is the texture of your tooth. The way the light reflects off doesn't just have to do with the stains on the tooth, the actual appearance, but the way it's handling the waves of light that hit that surface and bounce off of it is the texture of the tooth. So the shinier your enamel is, the more bright it will appear, the more light reflects off of it, where the less shiny or duller the outer surface of your tooth, will be less light reflecting off it, which will make it appear darker. Exposed dentin is less shiny than enamel, so this appears darker. So again, as the enamel gets thinner and more dentin starts to get exposed as we age or as we use our teeth appear darker over time. A big thing that people come to us about changing the color or the appearance of their teeth is the way things look in photographs. So the external surface of your tooth has so much to do with how your teeth appear in photographs. A photograph is just light. A photograph is light waves hitting a sensor for a moment of time. And so what it looks like, a tooth may appear darker in photographs and not real life. And that has to do with the way that tooth or the teeth are reflecting light and how the waves are penetrating the sensor that's receiving the light for that moment. So part of the thing we connect with our patients about on the texture is what you're doing to take care of your teeth and what you're using. And we'll go down this rabbit hole as we get a little further in the podcast, but the way you take care of your teeth affects the way your teeth look. And your oral habits in terms of how you're brushing, what you're brushing with, affects the texture of your teeth, which then affects the way your teeth look. Aside from the functional health of your teeth and how much tooth surface you have, if you're wearing away your enamel, your tooth surface, aside from it being weaker, it's also not looking as nice, not reflecting light as well as it could. What I'd like to do is pop up a figure for those of you that are watching it, if you have the ability to go onto our website later and take a look, is I want to just digress for a moment when we're talking about the external appearance, the extrinsic appearance, before we go into the internal appearances. Just talk about color and think about, we define in dentistry, define color as different shades. But before that, we have to talk about hue, chroma, and value. And so hue is the actual color we're talking about, red, yellow, brown. The actual color is hue. So people have different hues of teeth, and we actually organize the way we make restorations, the way we evaluate your teeth, primarily on hue. The next part of the layer in dentistry that's so important is value, and that's the brightness of the tooth. That's how dark or how light it is. I like to think about it as the percentage of gray in a tooth. So you have a single hue, but you can change the way the appearance of that hue is by the value of it and making it a lighter or darker color. And then, of course, chroma is the other part of it, like I mentioned, and that's kind of the intensity of the color itself. So how intense the color is. And there's a few really nice diagrams from encyclopedias that define this. It's the Munsell system, and they put some graphics together that get you to conceptualize it in a really nice way. And I want you to think about this when you think about your teeth. Now, this is important when you're thinking about whitening your teeth, or if you're faced with doing restorations on your anterior teeth and you have to ask yourself, what color am I making my teeth? It happens when people are doing just a couple of restorations, or something happens where you're losing your teeth and you need to replace your teeth through implants, or let's say you're doing upper and lower veneers. Thinking about the aspects of color and how you decide on what color works best for you, depending on your age, depending on your desire, depending on your other features of your face, on color of your gums, it all goes into making decisions. And I think that people often like just think about, oh, my teeth are darker than I want, let me make them lighter. Well, we are thinking about this behind the scenes. When we're looking at your teeth, we're holding shade tabs up to your teeth. So we then classify and quantify the color of your teeth primarily through a shade guide, a shade tabs. Some of you may have experienced a dentist holding a shade guide up. This is a classic shade guide. This is one that's been around forever. It's really the basis of the foundation of how we pick colors in teeth. And so we divide it into four main categories, being A, B, C, and D. A being the most common, B being the second most common. And so if you look at it, you wouldn't see it this way, but it's more of like a reddish brown or yellow. Now, if you went to the darker shades, you would see more of that. But of course, we talked about saturation and value. The A colors are all the same hue with different amounts of saturation and value. So as we get less saturation of the color of red and brown, so it's a lighter color, and we're getting a higher value, more white, you end up looking like a white tooth, right? These little parts of characteristics of the different colors. So C and D, gray and reddish gray, are typically considered a little less pleasing, and there are a percentage of population walking around with these teeth also. What's important noting just with whitening is the A and B shades whiten better than the C and D's. So to figure out exactly how far you'll get from when you're starting at one shade going lighter, it's important to know the classification of your shade to help manage your expectations, or also to manage the effort you'll have to do to get to a certain shade. So many times if you're a C and D, you might have to do more things to get to a lighter shade than an A or B person. Just know that most people are A and B, so the chances are that you're a little luckier than not. And if you have a C or D, it's okay. You just have to, like I said, put more effort and try more things. And we'll talk about that as we go forward. A few things about the internal or the intrinsic color being the inside of the tooth. And that's going to help to influence these qualities that we just spoke about in terms of the hue and chroma and value. Most of your aesthetics is from the inside of your tooth. For the internal color, we can agree and accept that the appearance of your teeth is mostly from the internal aspects. And so the few things that can change the way your teeth look and make it darker. So one thing that the inside of the tooth, the pulp and the nerve, some people, you have had an injury through life or through orthodontic treatment, the tooth may have died, or from a large filling and cavity, there'd be a dead nerve in that tooth, in an anterior tooth. That tooth may look darker, and because of the necrosis that occurs in those cellular matter and blood clot that shows through to the tooth, and it may be darker. There are ways of internally bleaching teeth. We're not going to go into that today. That's more of an endodontic or root canal specialist thing. That's for a future topic. Just something to note. Also, as you're developing, there may be some incorporation of medications that can darken your teeth. Things like tetracycline or other antibiotics can be taken up into your tooth on the development of that tooth that will impart the color into it. People sometimes ask, why do my teeth get darker over time? What happens? You know, at developing, I had darker teeth. There's a lot of answers to those questions, and it depends on the person. So the things we're looking at is the texture. We're looking at what gets incorporated into your teeth over time. And if nothing else, your teeth just do get darker over time. As the teeth gets thinner, things get darker over time. And that's why this is a popular conversation that we have with our patients. So in the 1940s, tetracycline, a broad spectrum antibiotic, got incorporated into the population. And we found that when taking these as a child, they got incorporated into calcifying tissues. Calcifying tissues also incorporated some aspects of the antibiotic into it. This happened in about 3-6% of the population. And we still have patients who come to us from different countries that even today that is incorporated. So we find that it's still happening. The knowledge is out there and they're using it less, but it still does happen. So there's a percentage of people who do have tetracycline staining in their teeth. A lot of times they end up resorting to doing things like veneers, but it's a good place to start by trying to whiten your teeth. And just a side note about if you have some type of medication-induced darkening in your teeth, the best way to whiten those teeth is a lower percentage for a longer period of time. So an in-office procedure might not be the best way to target darker teeth to get them whiter if you happen to have a result of tetracycline staining in your teeth. The other thing that has gotten incorporated to teeth on formation by ingesting is fluoride. Excessive fluoride can result in fluorosis. There's some nice podcasts about that. Huberman just did a really nice podcast about fluoride and how confusing it is and how some people in our country are suing to get fluoride out of the water. There are some places that are suing to get fluoride in the water. And so the right dosage of fluoride is really important in your children as they develop. It helps strength of bones and teeth, but too much of it can weaken bones and teeth. We talk about that a bit in our caries prevention lecture on podcast. If you haven't listened to that, it's worth diving in a little bit. But you want to find out the fluoride in your water and then understand how you can or should also medicate your children with fluoride if they're not getting it, or if they are getting enough in their water and not medicate it. And this, as it happens here, is that these white spots of fluoride get incorporated into your teeth. In really extreme cases, the spots actually become brown. And so the best way that we treat this is, luckily, when we whiten people's teeth with fluorosis, is the white spots don't generally get whiter, but the surrounding tooth would get whiter. So what we're trying to do is to bring up the other darker spots of the tooth so there's less of an optical illusion of the difference between the white spot and the tooth. And so it gets a better blend. There are a few genetic factors that can increase the way your teeth look in a positive way or also affect it negatively. Dentinogenesis imperfecta and amelogenesis imperfecta affects the cells that actually make the enamel and the cells that make the dentin. There are two different types of cells that deposit these mineral structures when we're developing. And there are some genetic factors that go into people who do not develop dentin properly. That's the inner surface of the tooth. And so these teeth are translucent, gray, yellow, brown, and terribly weak. We end up having to do restorations on most of the teeth in these patients' mouths. And it happens often in amelogenesis imperfecta, which affects the enamel of your teeth. This also causes your teeth to look yellow and weaker. So again, we have to end up doing restorations on these people. And these patients end up having restorations through their life. Also, we found genetically that some people have thicker enamel, conversely. And people who have thicker enamel typically have more of that layer away from their dentin. And so their teeth appear whiter and they have more enamel, so it's a shinier situation. So genetically, you can have some influence in either your teeth being really, really white or having some issues where they're not strong enough. So it's a good idea to take a baseline of where you are. If you're not happy with the way your teeth look and you're interested in changing the color of your teeth, to understand where you are, kind of what got you there, what factors go into where you are, you can figure out what the best solution is for changing the color of your teeth. Sometimes it has to do with functional and health. The teeth are getting weaker. And sometimes it has to do just, you're just not happy with the way your teeth look. So differentiating that gives you the ability to then know what the treatment options are and probably what the best result would be given the different options. What I like about this topic, opposed to some of the other ones that we've done, is it's a pretty linear topic. And what I mean by that is there aren't so many different ways to skin this cat. The one way we've isolated to whiten teeth in dentistry is hydrogen peroxide or carbamide peroxide. It's the same end result. It's hydrogen peroxide. You know, with the caries podcast we did, there's so many different avenues you can go down. There's a lot of different options of weighing, treating things in dentistry. But what I like about this topic is that you're going to get the most bang for your buck, the most result by using a hydrogen peroxide solution. There are a few other solutions out there, but we haven't found them to be on any level as effective, nearly effective, and worth your time and money. And so what's happening here, if you use carbamide peroxide, it's a tighter bound chemical than hydrogen peroxide, and it breaks down to form hydrogen peroxide over time. It just breaks down slower, so you find the whitening effect lasts longer. These are typically in prescription strength materials where almost all the over-counter materials have hydrogen peroxide solution. What you're simply doing, it's a gel form and it breaks down into water and free radicals, into oxygen, activated oxygen molecules, and that's what's doing the work here. This actually reacts with the external and internal portion of the tooth. So it's influencing the extrinsic color and the intrinsic color of your tooth. It's influencing both. On the surface stains, the hydrogen peroxide is actually changing them chemically to lighten. The hydrogen peroxide breaking down, the reactive oxygen species also get through the tooth. They actually can transfer through the crystalline structure and penetrate the dentin. And what it's chemically doing is it's binding with the protein and the different staining molecules within the tooth, and it's changing their bond structures, breaking double bonds typically. And that changes the way that the light reflects, and it's lightening. Just like you were bleaching anything. It's the same chemical process in a way that we do in our teeth, that we bleach anything else. And so this actually can just whiten your teeth by changing the optical appearance of the stains and the actual tooth surface. And so that's like, it's pretty simple. If you think about that, you think about that's the way that we have figured out to whiten the teeth best. Then you can now think about the ways you would whiten your teeth and how would you utilize this tool? How would you utilize a tool of hydrogen peroxide gel on the outside and inside of your teeth to whiten your teeth? And you could probably realize that the first thing I'm going to touch on is the least effective product in dentistry is whitening toothpaste. If, you know, we're always getting asked, what are our favorite products and what do we recommend? The one we recommend the least is a whitening toothpaste. It's the one thing that I think should be taken off the shelf. Charcoal toothpaste, whitening toothpaste. If you turn them around, you realize there are not any real chemical toothpaste that can change the way your teeth look. The solution they have is abrasivity. A whitening toothpaste somehow can be marketed as a whitening toothpaste because it's abrasive and it can abrade away the external stains on your teeth. So we can accept that whitening toothpaste are actually abrading stains away. Well, unfortunately, you can't abrade stains away, cannot, unless you also abrade tooth surface away. So whitening toothpaste generally are abrading away the hard structures of your teeth, and then also your gum tissue. So this is the reason why I don't see much benefit for people to use whitening toothpaste routinely or almost ever. Fine, you're going to an event on a Friday night or a wedding, you're using it very sparingly, I can accept that. But it's something that should not be used on a daily or weekly basis. More situational, but I'm not really sure how much effect you're gonna get where if you're going to an event and you're worried about pictures, how much will that one-time 2-minute scrub of a whitening toothpaste actually do good for you? You might have asked yourself when we were talking about texture, what is this guy talking about texture so much when we were talking about whitening? Well, exactly here is where it plays, because if you want to understand the way your teeth look, if you're using a whitening toothpaste, you're going to be abrading your tooth surface, making your enamel thinner, changing the way your teeth look over time and darkening your teeth. You're actually doing the exact opposite of what the goal of a whitening toothpaste is. So in calling them whitening toothpaste, I think there's a real confusion for the public and misconception for patients. I'm saying a whitening toothpaste actually causes your teeth to be less white. There are some products on the market that do have agents of whitening without being abrasive. We have no affiliation with Sensodyne, but they have seemed to be the most responsible company over time about targeting whitening by having agents, and they're coming out with a new product now that targets stains without being abrasive. Typically, I'm waiting for some information. We're waiting, my team, from the abrasiveness of their new product, but I'm sure, like their older products, it's in a healthy level of abrasivity, and it helps to just lightly whiten the teeth. The way we measure abrasiveness in dentistry is by their RDA, the relative dental abrasivity. And so you can Google this. You can Google how abrasive your toothpaste is. And so you'll find that many whitening toothpastes are way too high in the scale. There's some nice charts. If you look on Google Images, you can find some really nice charts about how abrasive your toothpastes are and where they should be. You really want it like less than 80. The closer to zero, the better. Zero can't be the number that's going to be. I like to personally use a toothpaste that's like, you know, 20, 30 at the most, if possible. And you can, like I said, you can Google this, some of the most commonly used toothpaste and the abrasiveness of it. The only other toothpaste that I can advocate using for whitening a toothpaste is a hydroxyapatite toothpaste. So we talk a lot about this in our caries prevention talk. And so hydroxyapatite is naturally whitening. So when hydroxyapatite gets taken back up into the tooth surface, when you use these toothpaste, we find that it is naturally whitening by the way it reflects light. So if you're wanting to use a whitening toothpaste, what I recommend is in the morning, use a fluoride toothpaste, and in the afternoon or evening, use a hydroxyapatite toothpaste, or just alternate. Use one a day and alternate the two. Or I have some patients that like to put a little bit of both on their toothbrush and use like half fluoride toothpaste, half hydroxyapatite. There haven't been no studies about that solution or that method, but we have found that hydroxyapatite is a safe, healthy whitening toothpaste in actually chemically changing the way light reflects off your teeth. All right, so many people and many of our patients have tried, or you've seen everywhere, is Crest White strips and other whitening methods. I know when I'm scrolling on social media, I'll see all these different whitening products. So knowing that hydrogen peroxide is the way teeth are whitened, you can probably accept now that they are the same way of whitening, just different delivery methods. So they range, and it's kind of hard to find this information out about what percentage do you use, what's the most effective, what's too much, what's too little. And so the over-the-counter typically range, they could be up to 10, could be up to 14% hydrogen peroxide. They're either made of strips that you put in your teeth or these trays where you pour gel in. Some have lights, some don't. And again, they're really marketed differently and they have different delivery methods, but they're all the same chemical compound. So we can probably accept that they're all going to work similarly. If you're interested in whitening your teeth with an over-the-counter product, you might want to find the one that works the best. We recommend Crest White strips in our practice. Since Crest White strips hit the market, they've been pretty good about adapting the product to try to make it more effective and more successful. We have no affiliation with anything we're mentioning today. It's just something that we found works best for our patients when they're looking for a simple solution that's going to whiten minimally for a minimal cost. We'll talk about the light a little bit, but I wouldn't be allured by the products that have a light. They're going to be no more effective than a product without a light. The benefits of these over-the-counter products are that they're inexpensive, right? They're relatively easy to use. They're disposable, and it's not a lot of commitment. It doesn't take a lot of time to get these products and to try them out. They're also easy to take on the go, right? I mean, plenty of people throw a few in their bag and their purse and they're traveling, or you throw them on in the cab ride before a date or before a wedding and throw them out when you get out of the car ride. That's definitely a benefit of these. They're going to probably whiten just one or two or three kind of shades at the most, right? So we spoke about the shade guide and figuring out where you are and where you can get to. These over-the-counter products are going to just whiten a very small amount, right? And so that could be a pro or a con depending on what your needs are, what your wants are. They're going to give you a little bit of enhancement, not take you very far, but it's not a bad place to start for a lot of people. The reasons we don't like these products is they're quite sloppy, right? They're not controlled. They have these, like we said, they have these trays or these strips, and you put them on your teeth and they're kind of go all over, right? They spill out of the tray, they spill out of the strips, they're on your gum tissue. So you're getting a quantity of hydrogen peroxide on your teeth and gum that is probably more than you need throughout. So that's going to help to increase your sensitivity and possibly irritate your gum tissue. It's going along the necks of the teeth, along the dentin, and that can definitely irritate things and cause more sensitivity and cause to erode gum tissue or dentin or tooth surfaces if overused, right? So the gel is getting everywhere and can really cause some problems. And also they're not very effective. So one of the problems with these over-the-counter is you're spending time and money on a solution that isn't getting you very far. So it's probably not the most efficient, effective way to get your teeth whitened. And so because I'm constantly seeing these on social media and I'm seeing them targeted to for me to sell to my patients or me to advocate them, a lot of these products, like I said before, have this preformed tray that has a light attached to it. I think this is a great time to talk about the light used in whitening. So again, it's a blue light. Laser whitening is used from a laser machine in a dental office, off-label use. This is a different, not many people are doing laser whitening. It's not used commonly. It's not something you're using at home. You're using, or us in our dental office, mostly we are using a visible blue light, the light blue. Now it's an LED light, used to be halogen, and same as the device is over the counter. It's a little blue LED light that lights it up. And the thought is that it can activate the gel. Thought is that it makes it more effective. A couple of studies that we have included in our show notes, you'll see that typically the light, when used, can increase sensitivity, actually, and not improve the bleaching effect. One study says dentists should consider not using the light for people who get sensitive or not using it at all, and that more studies are needed to evaluate it. Second study, again, found that bleaching treatment of vital teeth, which is teeth without root canals, did not show an improvement of when using a light activating source. So I'll digress for a moment and think about dental offices. We have an option when we purchase something and we use something in our office. Every doctor does, right? You have knee replacement. They have a decision of what brand knee manufacturer they're using for those replacement parts. And that's everything that we do in the office. And so we in the office have tried out the best systems and the ones that are the most effective with the least amount of sensitivity. System we use most commonly does come with a light. We do use a light in our practice for many of our patients' whitenings. If someone gets very sensitive, we can do without the light because the actual effectiveness is questionable. But knowing that the system that we like is most effective that has a light, we do use a light commonly. But I mean, the truth is the literature does not 100% support it. The good news is there's no downside to the light aside from the sensitivity, and we'll dive deeper into the sensitivity in a moment. But the good thing to know is that the sensitivity, when you're using the whitening products properly as developed by the manufacturer at the interval they recommend, the light will cause no harm because the sensitivity will cause no long-term problems. It's a temporary problem and it will resolve within 24 hours, if not 48 hours. So we touched a bit about the over-the-counter pre-made whitening trays and whitening solutions and devices. The next level of whitening are pre-made trays that are prescription strength. These are products that we sell to our patients as dental practices. Typically, they're ranging from 10 to 15% hydrogen peroxide. So it's similar of the percentage of the over-the-counter product, but it should be somewhat higher in general, compared from a 6 or 10% to a 10 to 15%. Of course, now you can find some over-the-counter that are higher, but on average, the prescription strength pre-made trays are higher than the over-the-counter products. And typically these are made a little better than the over-the-counter ones. They fit better and they're made a little more responsibly with how they're putting the gel in, the carriers of the gel, and how it goes against the teeth. We kind of consider this to be the best of the cheaper options. So it's probably better than something you would just buy over the counter. It's around the same cost or a small amount more, but typically these are under $100. When you do a deep dive into these products, when my team and I were going through the material safety data sheets for a lot of these companies, a lot of the products they sell, and what's interesting is that you'll find a range in a lot of the products. So what they're going to say is, well, the product on the package might say 10%. But when you look at the actual form they're submitting for the quantities and concentrations, they're giving ranges. They're giving ranges of like a 5% window, a big range. So we like to advocate companies that are somewhat more significant, have a higher attention to quality. So that's one reason why I'll caution you from buying something that you see on a TikTok ad, an Instagram ad, or at a drugstore somewhere. We like to use Crest Whitestress because they're the most used, the most tested, most consistent. Again, we have no affiliation. That's why the products you can get from the dentist are made at a higher quality. They're more specifically what you think are in them, what they say is in them. So you're going to get maybe a little less questionable sensitivity because it's a little less sloppy. It's a better carrier. They're better made. The ones that we can sell ourselves. Typically with these products, one would wear them 5 to 10 nights, and you're going to get about 3 to 5 shades lighter, right? These are better than over-the-counter because, like I said, they fit better, they conform to your tooth better, and they get you a little whiter than the typical over-the-counter, which is just going to get you 1 or 2 shades lighter. The problem with these are that they are still more sloppy than a custom tray or an in-office procedure. They will get onto your gum tissue. They will get on your root surface. So there may be some more collateral damage with these over-the-counter or pre-made solutions for whitening. They're cheaper. They're effective on some level. They're sloppier. So you have to kind of use them and be observational about what's happening when you wear them. You have to really pay attention, making sure you're not irritating your gums. You're doing it on your own, and therefore you need to be more careful. So with that, we'll go to almost like what I find is the least used option in my practice, at least, and that's at-home custom trays. These are used primarily in our practice as a maintenance solution, right? Maintenance solution. So if you're sitting there, you want to whiten your teeth, what's the first thing you're going to try to get from where you are to near where you want to be? And that's going to be almost always an in-office procedure. And the custom-made at-home trays are a more of a maintenance solution. But they're a great solution in themselves as a first step to get you from where you are to where you want to be. And so let's talk about that. What happens is your dentist would take an impression of your upper and lower jaw, and then they would make a thin, flexible material that would overlay the teeth that you are to whiten. And they're custom made, and they're scalloped to just cover your tooth surface. So the nice part about these is you fill them with a very small amount of gel, probably less than a peppercorn. Small amount on just the facial surface, on the surface exposed, and then you would put the tray in your mouth, adapt it, and wipe off any excess. So it's scalloped, so it does not go near your gum tissue where the pre-made trays do, right? So it's going to protect the root surface and gum tissue more so than the pre-made trays. So less gum irritation, less sensitivity. The nice part about these is you can dial them up or down. We have percentages, the concentrations of the hydrogen peroxide gel ranging from 10% up until the 40s. And so it's made a little differently than a lot of the over-the-counter because some of them are also carbonized peroxide. So as we spoke about earlier, the two different peroxides, if it's made with carbonized peroxide, it's going to break down slower and you'll probably have a little more effect. You've used hydrogen peroxide in your life and you get a cut, you pour it on and it dissociates quickly. When we have this carbonized peroxide bound molecule, it doesn't break down as quickly into water and the free radical. It's a slower process, so the whitening gel can stay on your teeth longer. The hydrogen peroxide is breaking down slower, exposing the tooth longer over time. And this is one of the benefits of having the whitenings from your dentist specifically. The highest, like I said, is typically 40 to 50% peroxide, and those are the least amount of time worn. So you're gonna wear that for 30 or 45 minutes a day, and where the lowest is usually around to 8 to 15%. And these are going to be worn 6 to 8 hours or overnight. And so the higher percentage, although it's you have to wear a lot shorter, because it's happening so rapidly, you get a lot more sensitivity, where the lower percentage gets less sensitivity. So you can kind of play around with this and you wear it one time. You can see if what's tolerable. Is it making you too sensitive? Is it too long? Is 1 hour good? Is 45 minutes long? You want to sleep with it. You kind of have to figure out what works best for you. It's important to note that at the end, if you're wearing a high percentage for a short amount of time, a low percentage for a long amount of time, the end result is the same. You're not getting a different outcome. There's not really a difference. And the literature shows that. There have been studies about the effectiveness of the trays, different percentages over different times. As long as you're using it the right way, the right amount of time, you're not going to get a different result. It's really about figuring out the logistics of what works best for you to wear and what causes you the least amount of sensitivity for you, or what you're willing to tolerate. Some people rather wear for a short period of time and deal with it. So that's something you have to personally decide. One thing we're talking about is when you whiten, when you complete the prescribed whitening amount, So if you're wearing trays at home that we would make for you, your dentist would make for you, or an in-office procedure, the one advantage of the custom-made trays at home, worn for 7 to 10 days, hourly, however long that percentage that you're wearing recommends, this solution for whitening your teeth has the slowest rebound effect. So the whitening effect would last the longest with custom trays at home. We're talking about 2 years compared to 18 months. 18 months would be something with an in-office procedure. So how white you would get, you'd start to rebound starting 18 months with an in-office procedure, which we'll get into next, where the at-home trays, you're going to typically last a little longer. I'm mentioning these times. It's important to know, because this is a cosmetic solution, because this isn't a health situation that we're getting, treating a disease, the literature is a little foggy here and a little less regulated, less specific. Companies are consistently adapting what they're doing, changing it. And so when my team and I are sitting down doing the research for this podcast, a little challenging because we're not really hitting the mark on anything specifically. The nice part about it is that it's a little looser. The frustrating thing for us is that we can't give exact answers as much as we'd like to, because again, it's not so well researched where compared to other parts of healthcare and dentistry, cosmetic solutions are a little more of a marketplace than it is a solution for treating a disease. Now let's jump into an in-office whitening. My patients and our practice, this is the go-to way when someone hasn't whitened before and they want to start whitening their teeth. An in-office procedure. So it's about an hour, hour and a half long procedure. You sit down in the dental chair, the hygienist, the assistant, the doctor will paint a barrier on your gum tissue, retract your lips and cheeks, and then paint on the whitening gel at a higher percentage. The very high percentage whitening gel. Some are 20%, some are 45%, depends on the company. And you would sit for a series of sessions. Some are 3 20-minute sessions, some are 4 20-minute sessions, some are 15-minute sessions. And they vary for the company. They vary for the company and the percentage. And the good thing is that it's typically about an hour to an hour and a half. And in that time period, you're going to get about 8 shades lighter. And it's the same amount as wearing the custom trays with a prescription strength. So again, the over-the-counter, you're getting 1 or 2 prescription strength. You're getting 3 or 5 shades. With the custom trays at home or an in-office procedure, you typically are going to move along that shade tab, as I showed you, 8 shades higher is the on average what a lot of literature shows. The downside of this is that it's most expensive and you have to go to your dental office and do it, right? It is prohibitive for some people to spend $1,000 or $500 or $1,500 wherever you are. I know some offices have promotions on this and such. So it just varies, but comparatively speaking, it is the most expensive, but it's also the most effective. As we spoke about with the over-the-counter, some systems, and the system we do use in our office does come with a blue light, not a laser here. Being it's an off-label use, something we're not going to spend much time on, but it is something that we use occasionally in our office. And again, the only reason to not use the blue light is if you are someone who suffered or suffers from sensitive teeth or becoming sensitive from whitening, and you can whiten there knowing without the light, knowing that you're probably not giving up too much. And you know, some studies show a small amount of improvement with the light. So if you're not that sensitive, you can use a light. It may increase the speed of the chemical reaction of whitening your teeth, but studies are not exactly conclusive on it, but it really helping a large amount. We've talked about the 4 main ways to whiten your teeth, right? Over the counter, pre-made prescription strength, custom trays with prescription material, or in office. So in our office, we've gotten together with our team and we've figured out a way that we think is the single best way to whiten if we had to pick one for the average person. And that's an in-office procedure followed up without at-home trays. As I tell most of our patients who are going to whiten, an in-office procedure will get you anywhere between 80 to 100% of how white you want to be. You're 100% as white as you want to be. You're good. You have the trays at home. You can maintain them throughout the year. 6 months, 10 months. 18 months, you start getting darker, wear the trays for a couple days, really a lot of time, depending on the prescription strength gel that we decide is good for you. You'll get back to that position. Or if you're someone who does an in-office whitening and it's not as white as you want, you can then accelerate it not long after the whitening. And lastly, those people who are those C and D shades that we spoke about, it's really great, I think, to accelerate the whitening with an in-office procedure and then couple it knowing that you're going to wear the trays at home. I feel like this is the best approach for someone who has a C or D shade. If you're one of those people and you've been frustrated with the lack of whitening results that you get, this is the best result. And this is what we do for those patients the most to get you the happiest you can be. And listen, you might have to accept that it just doesn't work as well as you might want it to. So we touched upon the questions that we get most frequently, and that's definitely, how often can I whiten my teeth? This is another interesting question, because as we've researched this, there are no real independent guidelines to this question. They're not there. Some of the companies give you guidelines, and that's what you can go by. So you'll find people on YouTube talking about whitening, other dental offices, and again, their range varies. It's a little hard to navigate, but we have to use some common sense. And if you're evaluating your teeth and you're looking at your teeth, your gum tissue, your tooth surface, and how you're whitening, you have to make some decisions around that, because the last thing you want to do is cause some harm, because there are some things that you can affect by over whitening. In general, the over-the-counter products, if you use them for 1 to 2 weeks, you can probably use them again within 6 months. The prescription strength at-home products, again, if you're using them for 1 to 2 weeks, then we also like to say 6 to 12 months to touch up. And we're talking about a load dose at first of doing a full whitening and then touching it up for a short amount of time in 6 months, 12 months. In office, because I have many patients that will not wear a tray at home. Personally, it's hard for me to do. It's too messy. I don't have patience for it. And so the guidelines are, depending on the company, 12 months to 18 months. So you can do an in-office procedure somewhere between every 12 to 18 months, depending on the system that we're using. It's really important that you work with your dental team for guidance here. And again, try to use some common sense. Be careful not to overdo it. Be careful, be cautious, work with your team to figure out what the right interval is for you. One of the other top questions that we get is, does whitening harm my teeth? Does it erode my enamel? I think this came about in the 80s when cosmetics started becoming more popular and the aesthetics of teeth and restorations and whitening became more of a thing. And came part of the culture, part of the thought that said that, you know, if you whiten your teeth, you'll erode your enamel. And so every study has shown that when you're using the products within the recommended dosage, the recommended interval, there is no real harm to the tooth surface, which is reassuring, right? Every study has shown that it's safe to whiten. Again, the dose makes the poison with everything else. And so if you are not overwhelming your gum tissue and your teeth with the whitening gel quantity and too often, you'll have no problems. If you're using it too often, you will have problems. So the number one thing it can cause is tooth erosion. Because of the chemical process that's happening, you can actually erode your enamel over time. The other thing is that you can erode the enamel to cause sensitivity, or it can alter the nerve characteristics to make your teeth permanently sensitive to stimuli. That happens through two different processes: by eroding the enamel, less enamel, more penetration of temperature and such, and or just the actual nature of the bleach penetrating to the nerve can cause some harm to the nerve that it becomes permanently sensitive. Another thing that can happen is your gum can become irritated and receded. Bleaching your teeth, or like bleaching anything else, it can become an irritant, and you can actually bleach away some of your gum tissue and burn it chemically and then cause some recession. Something to look out for. That's one reason why in-office procedure is probably the safest. You're not ingesting any of the gel and you're not getting any gel on your gum tissue because it's protected. So the safest way to whiten your teeth by far is an in-office. And that's one of the reasons why it's the primary way that our patients whiten their teeth. In 2010, Goldberg did a study and they found that there are risks with over-whitening: tooth erosion, mineral degradation, increased susceptibility to demolation, and pulp damage. And so it's definitely out there. And when you review the products and you review some studies, that you can over whiten. So the dose makes the poison. Use it as prescribed. Don't abuse it. Don't get caught up in trying to make things happen too white or too far. That's another reason why we talk about supervision, doing these procedures along with your dentist, looking at things and evaluating things and giving you guidance. You know, we're on your side. They should work as your team to help give you the right tools that you need to get the results that you can get in a safe way. A lot of our patients also report to us that, I whitened my teeth 20 years ago and I got very sensitive. Some people say, and I got zingers all day, electric shocks. I know when I whitened the first time, it happened to me for sure. So what's exactly happening here? Why are my teeth becoming sensitive? And why am I feeling electric shocks or zingers? We're not really sure. There's no proven reason or proven method here that's happening. There are a few hypotheses. As we go through the literature, there's a few hypotheses. And one is just the simple act of the peroxide penetrating through tooth surface is actually causing direct irritation of the nerve, direct activation of the receptors in the tooth, and that can trigger the nerve to become sensitive for a period of time. The other way it can happen is simply from the dehydration of the tooth and this hydrodynamic mechanism that causes all sensitivity. So fluid exchange from in and out of the tooth can dehydrate the tooth, and then the nerve is becoming this pressure difference. So when it's stimulated from hot or cold, it's causing this disruption to the nerve, or just from the process, the nerve is disrupted and it causes this signal to come to pain or these electric shock and zingers. The good news is that when you're whitening as recommended, it's 100% reversible. The whitening is there for 24 hours, maybe somewhat beyond that, 24 to 48 hours, but it's something that is 100% reversible as long as you're whitening in the proper interval and using the products properly. One of the problems with the over-the-counter products is the quantity of gel on these products leads to more dehydration and more penetration of hydrogen peroxide into the nerve. So you will get more sensitivity with over-the-counter products. The other thing that can happen is if when you're in an in-office whitening procedure, if they're applying too much gel to the tooth, you only need a thin amount of gel to actually whiten. And I have seen some people when they start whitening, they kind of cake on the gel. You want to make sure that your dentist, your hygienist or assistant isn't putting on an over amount of gel than they need. The thin layer is all you need to be effective. The good news is there is something you can do if you do suffer from sensitivity. Of course, there are people who are sensitive in their regular life to stimuli hot and cold. And there are some people who are situationally sensitive when they're whitening their teeth. So the thing you can do is there's potassium nitrate, which is the active ingredient in all sensitive toothpaste, Sensodyne. If you buy anything that says sensitive on it from the toothpaste aisle, it'll have that in it, 5%. And so you can use this toothpaste. You can either brush with it regularly, or if you're going to whiten your teeth, you can use it for a week or two before, and you can kind of layer it on the areas that are sensitive. A fun thing that we found is they do sell potassium nitrate gel on Amazon online, which you can purchase and you could put in a tray. You can even just rub it on your teeth a few days before you whiten, or if you are whitening at home, you can do it kind of after you whiten and before you whiten, and that'll help. What that's doing is, as we spoke about the hydrodynamic mechanism of water and fluids that fluctuate through the tubules of our tooth or our teeth, potassium nitrate actually temporarily plugs those tubules and prevents the exchange. So you're going to get kind of like less penetration of fluids that'll stimulate the nerve less and resulting in less sensitivity. So that kind of wraps up a lot of the things we think about and talk with our patients. And so I just will spend a few minutes on just some last minute thoughts. And just one thing worth noting is if you do wear whitening trays either one time or you're doing a whitening treatment or you're coming to the office and having it done, is you need to behave a little differently for the time right after. The process of the whitening does seem to open up your tubules and clean everything out, so your teeth are more vulnerable for stains for the 48 hours after your whitening. You want to avoid anything that could stain a white shirt. If it would stain a white shirt, you want to avoid it. Coffee, tea, red wine, berries, dark sauces, tomato. So you can almost eat anything with your back teeth. It's just the front teeth. So iced coffee is great. Iced tea, anything with a straw. If you want to avoid that, you want to drink some red wine with a straw. Not sure you want to do that. And acidic things also. Acidic things can also, because of the peroxide reacting with your teeth are going to remineralize a little bit over the next few days and everything will become plugged off. Acidic things will slow down that process, keeping your teeth more vulnerable. Another housekeeping thing to think about is if you have any restorations on your teeth or if you're going to be getting any restorations on your teeth. So the first thing is composite bonding and crowns or inlays and onlays do not change color. They are what they are. So if you have any of these restorations visible, and if you're whitening, those will not change. It's a good thing if they're lighter than your teeth, if they are the same color as your teeth, then your teeth might whiten away from them. Something to think about. Also to consider that if you're going to be needing any restorations or getting restorations, let's say you fall and chip a tooth, you have a cavity, something happened to your tooth, and you're going to need a single crown or a single veneer or a restoration that's visible in your mouth, you might want to think about whitening your teeth prior to putting on the final restoration, because that can actually, you want to match to what's around it. So if you're matching what's around it, that's then going to affect your potential of whitening down the road. So I'm just going to end on a few more tips about what we do in our office about that protocol for whitening. We ask all our patients to use a sensitive toothpaste for a week or two prior to whitening. Some people have been prescribed prescription strength fluoride toothpaste. Literature isn't so strong around that, but there's no harm in it. That's an option for people who are interested in that. And we kind of want to avoid, like I said, the dark substances leading right up to it and right afterwards. We like you to have some of the potassium nitrate gel or sensitive toothpaste ready, even if you don't brush with it beforehand, which I think you should, to have it ready in case you become sensitive. The other note about the zingers and sensitivity, if it's a short-term 24-hour, 40-hour issue, you can take over-the-counter pain medications for that. So we tried to highlight here some of the main things to think about whitening your teeth. Being it's a question we get so often in our practice, we thought one of the first handful of podcasts that we record would be about this, just to give you a little bit of idea of what's involved with whitening and the decisions that you have to make around it, depending on what your current situation is and what the effect that you're looking for, what the result that you'd like to get. So I hope we answered some of them. If we didn't, make sure you send a message. We can always follow up if we missed enough things, but I hope that we were able to answer most of your questions and that you can whiten safely and effectively and smile some more. Thank you for joining us this week. I hope you found it helpful and enjoyable. Please head to our website for our show notes and more information around the topics we discussed today. Please check us out on our YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok pages for weekly updates and other interesting topics we discuss more frequently. The information provided in this podcast is for general information and educational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional advice. Accordingly, before taking any actions based on such information, we encourage you to consult with the appropriate professional. We do not provide any medical nor health advice. You should seek the full diagnosis and treatment from your healthcare providers for any issues or conditions you may have. No doctor and patient relationship is formed. The use or reliance of any information used from this podcast is solely at your own risk. This podcast is purely for educational and informative purposes only.